Hello and welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners and podcast listeners everywhere. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx.
She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. Follow her voice, a straight dog is nice. She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, oh yeah. Don't be surprised if you wanna listen twice. Make decisions, find the right choice. Know yourself better, find your own voice. It's okay if you need help today, cause everybody needs a little push. From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
This weekly show, Everybody Needs a Little Push, with Ellen Stewart, the pushy broad from the Bronx, will be aired every Wednesdays on Transformation Talk Radio and podcast stations everywhere at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. I am delighted to bring you my weekly podcast program, which I hope will inspire you, coach you,
sometimes make you laugh,
and give you the push moment you need to move forward. And I'm going to do it the pushy Broadway. Straight up. No BS, easy, quick, with answers, suggestions, and directions that will give you a coaching experience that will be part cheerleader and part drill sergeant. Because everybody needs a little push from time to time. And here comes yours.
Everybody, 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 everybody needs a little push.
Everybody needs a little push.
I have asked the question out to the podcasting world, what is it like to be a mom at home with two small children during the stay-at-home directives? How do you entertain them? How do you keep them busy? How do you teach them? And I've gotten a tremendous amount of responses. I am going to highlight one or two of them today on my podcast show. And today we are talking to Emily from Toronto, who's going to talk to us about her two small children and how she is coping. Hello, Emily. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me, Ellen.
What attracted me to talking to you and doing the interview with you is what you said about the children that you have at home and how you describe them. Can you tell us a little something about your kids?
Yes. Yeah. So I have two boys, Theo or Theodore, who is four, and Hugo, who's two. Theo is a super loving little soul who's got all of his emotions on his sleeve and likes to bring those out often. And then there's Hugo, who is as fiery as his red mullet would suggest. He is a ball of energy and definitely loves to keep us on our toes. So the two of those mixed together have really been a lot of oil and water, or like all the at-home experience we're doing. It's a lot like vinegar and baking soda sometimes. There's a lot of explosions and it makes a real mess of your kitchen some days, I swear.
So was Theo in school before the stay-at-home directives?
Yeah. So in Ontario, at age four, you start junior kindergarten. So it's a full day program. So it's essentially like preschool, or it is full day. It's from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. And he was, adjusting to that and doing pretty well. He was also in an after-school program. So he would be gone from, 8:30 in the morning till about 4:35 in the evening. And same with our youngest, Hugo, who was at a daycare program as well.
So you had both children under the care of a program, and they were being taken care of until about, 2 months ago? When did they come?
Until the March break here in Ontario, yes. I think that was about March 14th, somewhere around there, was the day that we sort of found out that we would be transitioning to being homeschool teachers / daycare providers / everything.
/ general entertainers.
Circus performers, jungle gyms, because we can't go to the parks. Yeah. General butler service. I also do bathing duties. There's the food, just pretty much anything at their beck and call.
And beforehand, both you and your husband were working outside of the home. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I worked from home. My husband has a home office as well, but had been going out to a lot of meetings in sort of a nearby, the next over town. And so we were home a lot, and we were used to sort of working with each other at home. And if the kids had a sick day or something, we knew kind of how to manage it on a very short-term basis of like, all right, you're going to go to this meeting and we'll put them in front of the TV for this hour and they'll nap. And, you know, we kind of had like a hodgepodge system for those emergency days. But then when this happened, it's certainly, you know, the first few weeks was sort of us doing the hodgepodge version of that. And we quickly realized that that wasn't exactly working for the longer term.
What does the hodgepodge version look like? What did it look like?
Well, it was kind of like a huddle first thing in the morning of like, all right, what are your absolute necessities? Okay, like, what do you need to do? I got a call between this time and this time. I have a client this time to this time. And all right, you know, like, we'll figure out how to mix all those things together. And any time that we didn't, that we had some overlapping, we might, you know, if it was our older one, we could put on like a Sesame Street or something and put them in front of the TV. If it was our younger one, we'd really have to try and figure out like how to cuddle him or hold him so he'd be kind of quiet while we're on a conference call, or really just trying to like manage things as best we could. But it was very fly by the seat of our pants. It was very like a mid-morning huddle that we would just try and figure it out. And if something came up or if we needed to do something, we'd kind of make it work, and then we'd make it up in the evening. So it'd be like, all right, we put the kids to bed and then we finish up all of our work. So it made for a really long day that way.
Well, it sounds like we're scrambling to do this and then we're scrambling to do that kind of thing, you know, without planning. So when did you realize that wasn't going to work, and then what happened?
You know, it really took us like a solid 4 weeks, really, of doing this, where we're kind of like, this feels pretty exhausting, actually. Especially, you know, we were starting to get up earlier and earlier. Our kids were definitely not sleeping as well, so they were getting up earlier and earlier. To try and get work done before they woke up. We were staying up late to try and get work done then, and we weren't sleeping well ourselves. And it just sort of hit this point. And I actually myself got sick, and my doctor advised that I had to self-quarantine in our basement. And so I actually went into self-quarantine for a week until I felt better and had to be symptom-free for 72 hours. And so that's when we kind of really realized like, this is a pretty big tipping point.
Oh my goodness. So when you say you got sick for a week, did you have the virus?
I never got tested. That was in the protocol. I just sort of wasn't high risk enough to get tested at this point. But I had a temperature, I had the aches and the chills, and I was exhausted, and I really was feeling unwell in a flu-like way. So our doctor just sort of, I did a virtual visit with our doctor. So it was just over the phone or over online, kind of like similar to this. And she said the best thing that I could do was to isolate, which meant that like my kids couldn't touch me. My kids couldn't see me. I was just like this weirdo in the basement all the time, kind of isolating, which is really hard to explain to a two-year-old. You can't hug mama, you know, or a four-year-old who's just like dying to see you and doesn't really understand why you're down there, to try and like really isolate from them.
Yes, it's not like you can pick yourself up and go away. Yeah. I mean, they know you're down there and they still can't get to you. My goodness. What's your husband's first name?
John.
John. John must have been really pulling his hair out of his head trying to handle this in every sense, worrying about you, worrying about the kids. And coping, my goodness,
not even be able to like, you know, he couldn't pee alone. He couldn't do anything, right? Without an extra set of hands, you're really tied in many ways when it comes to that. So
during that time, he did all of this himself?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He did about a week straight of just like doing every single thing himself. And I just slept and he delivered me food and, you know, we sanitized every single thing in the house and I recovered and slowly kind of made my way back upstairs and reintegrated. And that was like a moment of like, okay, we've sort of gone to the extreme. All right, how do we find something in the middle? We know what the other end is, which is like the hodgepodge not working. Yeah. So like, how do we recalibrate? This is a good moment for us to recalibrate instead of just launching back into sort of where we were before, which again was very haphazard.
Well, gratefully, you only had a week of it, because most of us know that, you know, normally it's like 14 days and then even more, and then the threat of course, coming back. So I'm extremely glad that you were able to do that in such a short time, and nobody else, gratefully, has gotten sick, and the children are fine. So you're going back to a situation where you now have begun to work things out. So tell me, when you came out of this and you said that you needed a new plan, talk to me about how the mothers and fathers out there could develop a structure and a plan that obviously is now working for you. Tell us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it really took me and my husband sitting down and similar to the approach we took with the like morning huddle of being like, okay, well, what do you need to do? And what do I need to do? It was almost like a more intense version of that. It was like, okay, what are our goals for the next 6 weeks? You know, like, what do we really need to get done? What's the most important to both of us? And then it was kind of like, all right, what can we cut from there? It really came to a point of not trying to figure out how to do everything, but how to just like prioritize things. Because I think that's where so many of the people that I work with and myself as being a, you know, recovering perfectionist really struggle with. It's like, you feel like you got to do it to the max in every way, right? You got to be the best homeschool teacher. You got to keep them entertained with the most amusing things from Pinterest. And you also have to show up and be your best version of yourself at work, and your best over here and your best over there, and keep your house clean. And it's just like, it's too much. It really is too much pressure, and you can't stretch yourself that thin in every single direction, or else, like I happened, I got sick, right? Your body really just cannot handle that amount of stress, especially for long sustained periods of time, right? It's okay if it's a sprint, if it's okay if it's like your kid has a cold for the week. But when it comes to like 6 weeks, we're now into this, 8 weeks, 10 weeks. And by the end of this, it'll be at least 12 weeks. So it really is understanding that, like, okay, how can we do something that feels a little bit more sustainable? Now, my husband doesn't work for himself. He works for a company. And there really was that feeling of, how can I show up and not do as amazing as I expect of myself, or as I think that they expect of me? And so it was definitely a tough conversation where we had to ask ourselves a lot of hard questions and actually have those conversations. Like, he had to go back to his boss and have a kind of conversation with him. I had to really like go to my business and look at it and maybe walk back some things. And we also had to let down our guard when it came to our parenting. So, you know, we really didn't love using TV, and now it's like, okay, how can we think of it as a tool for us, right? Not just like an entertainment that they really love, but like a tool for us to set ourselves up for the day and make everything run so that everyone can be happy. Because that was kind of our goal at the end of it. We really figured that like, we don't want this to come out of us and all of us like hate each other, you know, have a worse off relationship, feel disconnected from each other. So like, what are the things that we can do if the result that we're working towards is actually more about peace within the home, feeling happy, feeling content, and not really burning ourselves out? How can we take the actions that work towards that? And that was the lens we used to sit down and like figure out our priorities.
You've said a lot of things, or really a lot of good things. And some of the things that we can all glean from that is, number one, realizing that we are human, mm-hmm. and that it's okay. Yes. To say, this is really hard.
Yeah.
And this is extremely unusual.
Yeah.
And I am up against something that I never thought I would be up against before. And I'm not only learning how to take care of myself, which is what you are saying, and understanding that I don't have to be perfect around it, but I also have to be accepting of the fact that I have to work with somebody else in this situation who is also not perfect at this. Yes. And learn to communicate and learn to do it together as a team. And also understanding that you want to be able to instill something in your kids to still make this a productive and positive situation under situations which are by no means positive or productive because of the devastation that has occurred. So I think those are really good tools to take with us. So let's just break it down a little bit logistically. Tell me what a normal day looks like in your home.
So it usually looks like I get up early, around 6:30, and go and grab a cup of coffee, and then I go into our makeshift office. So we put both of our boys into one bedroom, and we have turned our nursery into an office. So it's a nice place. We can close the door. I mean, they still come in, as you saw earlier, but You know, it's a nice place that we can actually have some mental clarity in that we can close the door and kind of come in. So I come in and do some work. I like to do some writing in the morning, journaling, like kind of do my own thing. And John will get up with the kids when they wake up and takes them downstairs and gets them some breakfast. And then I can kind of come down and join them once I'm done. And then from there, it's really dependent on the day. But usually it looks like John and I trading off depending on the times of our calls. So I have worked with my clients to kind of book themselves out for the duration of our time together. So I know way in advance as opposed to week to week. So I know way in advance exactly when I'll be speaking with them. And then John can work around that. We have a shared calendar on our phones that we just plug in any of our absolute essentials, sacred time that we absolutely need. And we kind of work from there. So we kind of have like touch points throughout the day. But really, it's like between 12 and 1, he won't book anything. So that lunch hour, we can actually sit down. If I need a break, I can go and get a mental break, that kind of thing. And then for our kids, we try to have a little bit of, it's less of a schedule and more of a routine. So it's like in the morning, we always have a recess. So that means we always go outside or we always move our bodies in some way. And then in the morning, we always have like a book time and a thing time. Like it's really about a thing that we're doing or an activity that we do in somewhat of a sequence. It sort of depends day to day, but somewhat of a sequence as opposed to being like from 9:30 till 10:30, we're going to do circle time or anything like that. And I think the other thing that we've really embraced throughout sort of changing to this routine thing is that we're not homeschooling. Like we really, truly aren't homeschooling. I'm not here to like, you know, give my kids or replace the curriculum that a homeschooling mother might do. Or a homeschooling parent might do. I'm not here to replace that curriculum because we're in a global pandemic, right? If this was happening and it was, you know, hurricanes raging outside or something else that was a threat to our health and safety, we wouldn't have such high expectations for ourselves with all of this. So we're really thinking of it as if it's some other kind of major disaster or major global thing that's going on that would allow us to have a little bit more grace with ourselves than, you know, an invisible virus that sort of has this weird existential threat.
So what you're saying is you've been more flexible in that regard.
Absolutely.
And beforehand, both of your children, Theo and Hugo, were getting some kind of learning experience. I mean, Hugo is very small. He's 2 years old. And even Theo at 4 years old was learning something basic. There is some kind of learning going on. Does that come from the teachers online? Do they actually sit in front of a program during the day? Is that part of it?
So once a week, both the daycare and the school will hold like a Zoom call where they get to kind of interact with their peers and the teachers will ask them some questions. They've sent some things, you know, through a Google Classroom, like some activities and things. But I really noticed that the way that we're teaching our kids right now is actually more through the quality of our questions and the way we interact with them than specific things. So during our recess time or when we go outside, you know, we'd go on a walk and before we might point out a few things or just enjoy the walk and chit chat. Now it's like, okay, we're going to try and find, you know, the everything that starts with the letter T, or we're, you know, inspecting a snail and asking questions about, well, that's interesting. Why would that snail shell be empty? And where do you think snails go in the wintertime and all those kind of things, right? We're really sort of like asking more inquiry questions. We're really turning things into learning games. So it's not as if we're adding new things to our schedule, a new pressure. It's just like a few basic questions that we can change. Like there's 26 letters in the alphabet. That is 26 times you can play that game. And just asking like the same few questions of like, why do you think that is? I wonder why this, what do you think? Are great ways to like start that conversation that is a learning opportunity in things that we were already doing.
Do you think your children appreciate both of you being home more?
Oh gosh, yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely my oldest. Like I said, he's like a very heart-filling soul and he loves the extra attention and the extra one-on-one time. I gotta say, like as much as they fight and can mix like oil and water, their relationship has actually blossomed so much because they've had to learn how to get along, right? They've had to learn how to play together, how to be together. And before they were separate in many ways, they had different social circles. And now that they're with each other constantly, and now we've shoved them in a room together too. Like it's not just getting along during the day. You better get along while you're sleeping too. They really have blossomed. And that's been an awesome thing to watch as well.
So the brothers are bonding. How about you and John?
Yeah, definitely. Again, it's like, you know, there was a few moments of friction in the beginning for sure, as we just bumped into each other and trying to figure all of this out. But you have to communicate so much more, right? It's interesting where there's times and things that I've heard from so many of my clients where they feel like they feel even more isolated, even though they're actually surrounded by people more. And the only difference between feeling isolated but being around people and feeling connected to other ones is communication. And so just having those skills of communication from being a life coach has been incredibly helpful for me. And so being able to like use those, draw upon them, call myself out on stuff, and be able to have that communication with my husband has been integral to us being able to come out of this. And again, it's like, I use the lens of what is the result that I want? Like, what do I really want out of this time? Is it to like push as hard as I can in my business and like drive forward? Or is it to like maybe drive at like 75% and use that extra energy to focus on like, how can I support him? How can I love him? How can I be there for him as a partner? How can I communicate my own needs as a partner? How can I meet my own needs or ask for my needs to be met? And all those kinds of questions really just creates a different kind of drive. Instead of wanting to like push, you know, at no expense and really move forward in certain areas, I've really softened and learned how the things that I want and the values that I hold can actually meet up with the actions that I take.
Well, those are very interesting words for sure. So you tell me that your relationship is thriving, that you are learning more and more about your children as a couple. Mm-hmm. You feel that your children's lives together are thriving and the boys are certainly bonding. And you also tell me that your work as a life coach has really helped you in many ways. I've talked to a lot of women over the past couple of weeks who are relationship coaches, life coaches, even love coaches, and they all say the same thing to me. The one key word is communication. Mm-hmm. Not only the communication that you have with your children and your husband, but the communication that you have this conversation with yourself. This introspective way of rediscovering what's really important to you. So let's talk about that a little bit. First of all, let's tell everybody about your work as a life coach and the kind of people that you deal with.
Absolutely. So yeah, I'm a life coach and I work with really high achieving women, especially women who, you know, really believe in like working to the bone and have seen so much success as a result of that, but are really feeling like they're starting to sacrifice a part of their lives and it just feels out of balance for them now. So I help them get back into balance. I help them really rediscover how they can still achieve success without killing themselves in the process. Yeah, I work in both one-on-one and I do a group program that'll be launching soon called the Perfectionist Recovery System, which is really about recovering from that perfectionist drive that kind of sets yourself up for disaster when you have these massive expectations of yourself and aren't able to meet them and just continually drive towards something that kind of ends up making you sacrifice your life and your sanity and all those things that make life worth living.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that you say that because I do a lot of work in addiction recovery. And recovery, as I know it, is also about staying in a place where your compulsions and your obsessions are at a minimum, where they're in remission, so to speak. And it's really interesting that you refer to this disease of perfectionism as something to be in recovery from, because it's very, very easy to fall into that trap for some high-functioning women and for women in general to feel that being the best mother, the best wife, the best woman executive is something that it's a role that somewhere along the line we were taught intrinsically we have to absorb. Mm-hmm. And now more than ever, the women that I work with in addiction recovery realize that perfectionism is one of the major issues that took them to the compulsion of drinking or drugging. Right. So we deal with perfectionism on a great level. And I have never before heard of that expression to be in recovery from perfectionism. But you're quite right, because it becomes a compulsion. It becomes a thought process that we automatically gravitate to. And it's always to our detriment, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And it becomes that kind of addiction as well, right? Like you are trying to feed a craving for that validation. if you can't, you know, stand in your own self-worth, then of course you're going to seek it outside. Of course you're going to seek it in that next promotion. Of course you're going to seek it by being the hero who comes in and saves the day with like the best promotion, or staying late and doing all the extra work, right? Of course you're going to find it in all those things. And when you show yourself as being the person who sacrifices above all else, then of course that is just like feeding that habit loop, and it is feeding that craving for validation. And that's where it really becomes a part of that addiction process, right? Where you really need to recover from that craving and from needing that craving and fulfilling it.
So how did you compensate yourself for that feeling? Because you were talking a little bit about personal relationship with that particular situation. How did you compensate for that in parenting your children during this time?
Yeah, well, I think it was, again, like really understanding what is the result that I want to have? Because sometimes when we just keep driving forward, we don't stop and really think about the thoughts that are going on in our head, right? We're like, what's that conversation we're having with ourselves? What is it we're really driving towards? You can kind of just be like on the speeding train and never stop and be like, wait a second. Is this the right destination? Did I plug in the right coordinates of my GPS? Like, you really can just keep going and keeping your head down. And it, again, like that can get reinforced through being validated from outside sources, and you keep going and you keep going and you keep going. So for me, it was really about like stopping, slowing down, checking in every once in a while and saying like, okay, what is the result that I really want to have? Like, what am I really driving towards here? And the more I got clear on that and made sure that it was lined up with the right values for me, the easier it was to really redirect some of those things. So the more I wanted it to be about connecting with my kids and not just like trying to get work done and trying to get them to sit still and shut up already, right? Or like, I just put out those Legos for you. How could you not? Like, it took me 25 minutes to build that train tractor. Like, how could this not occupy you for 5 minutes at least? Like, come on, right? The less I got attached to that, and I found myself putting myself in less stressful situations, right? I could actually go, if my goal was connecting with them, I could go and connect with them and cuddle with them and read a book. And then if I did need to go and write a few emails or go and do some work, they had already gotten that connection from me, and they actually could play on their own a lot better. And then that sort of helped me realize that, like, oh, I was driving towards the wrong result before. And of course it felt like friction for every single person here.
I found with clients that I deal with as well in terms of perfection that it's an intrinsic feeling. It's I have to be perfect because of my own expectations of myself, not only to prove to the world for outside validation, but for inward validation as well. I can't rest until this is exactly so, okay? Yeah. So it's learning how to just and to be grateful and to be happy with what is without us overtly manipulating what is. Pushy Broad from the Bronx has a group called the Letting Go Tribe. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we do in the Letting Go Tribe is understanding that we can let go of certain things that we held on to so tightly and we thought were so important to us. And the idea and the cathartic feeling of actually letting go, one of the things we learn to let go, as you said, and you work on with your clients, is the feeling of I have to be perfect. And when you have gotten to that point with your children and realize that you don't have to be perfect, and more than that, what you are now doing in a different way, because you are looking at it from a different perspective, is working better for you than you initially thought.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah, I think once I really stopped wishing that the kids weren't home all day, stopped wishing that I could just get some work done already, and really changed, like, okay, well, this is the circumstances. I'm not going to be able to change the circumstances. So like, how can I change my reaction to them by figuring out what is it that I really want out of today? Is it that I really want to get all this work done? Maybe. Okay. But it can't get done like this. This is the circumstances I'm working with. If I wasn't constantly fighting against reality and what is, I was able to let that go. That's when it really opened up for me to be able to realize, okay, well, what is possible here? And what do I really want? And what are my values? And where do I want to work towards?
Well, just like you said, I cannot change my circumstances. I have to change the way I react to these circumstances. Yeah. And those are the keys. I've always talked about cognitive change breeds emotional change, breeds behavioral change. We put a different thought into our head. We see it from a different perspective. And all of a sudden, we change the way we feel about something, which results in changing the way we act about something. I call it think differently, take command of your life. So now that you seem to have it down and you're kind of swimming along, according to the directives up in Toronto specifically and in Canada generally, how much longer do you think you'll be in this situation of stay at home with the kids?
Yeah, well, first, I wouldn't say I have it down. I'd still say there's a lot of those learning moments, right? And it is really just like continually making sure I'm not just charging down the track and having those moments to stop and check in. And also, again, like, let it go. Like, okay, that worked great for a month. Now we're in a different spot. You know, my youngest at two was, I think it's because, like, as much as we're taking them out to play, he's still not getting the same stimulation levels that he was when he was in a classroom full of, like, 20 other two-year-olds and dedicated teachers who were, you know, running curriculums. So he wasn't as tired and needing his nap in the afternoon. So now we've dropped a nap so that he's not, you know, trying to go to bed at 10 o'clock at night. And that's sort of like, okay, now we don't have that period in the afternoon where that was like our power hour in the afternoon. We have these naps. And so now that we've adjusted to that, it's like, okay, let's let go of that being a thing. And let's embrace what's going on here and figure out the next piece. So in Toronto, you know, we've have until the end of May is school closures, but it's about a 4-week cycle that we find out about 2 weeks before the next 4-week cycle gets renewed for the emergency directive. Our sort of general feeling here is that at earliest, kids will go back in September. So we really are planning for the long term, but we're also expecting that it's going to look really different. You know, we live in a massive city of millions of people. And so even our city is adjusting to how we move ourselves around, how we experience the outdoors, how we, as people who used to use parks as our backyards, are really finding new ways of being. And I think we're doing the same thing with understanding how we're using our own house or how we're using the schools and all that kind of stuff. So it could look extremely different. It could, there's been rumors about it being 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, so that they have half the classroom sizes, things like that. And so we're really just sort of mentally preparing for that, this being a marathon and this really being like setting out a new way of being. So anything that works, we're kind of putting in our tool belt and trying to expand upon it, figure out why it works. And again, not getting attached to it, but just sort of being like, okay, let's use that as a lesson. Let's kind of figure out where we can go from here. So I won't say it's going to stay the same, but I will say that this is going to be a lot of iterations and understanding that and embracing that we're not just going to like find a routine and then like knock it out for the next year is definitely not the plan we're taking.
It's definitely one step at a time, one day at a time. And how do I adapt to this moment right here?
Absolutely.
All the tools we need on a daily basis and to keep your sense of humor, which you most definitely have, because if we can't laugh at it, I mean, there are so much more to cry about here. And as long as you are healthy and your husband and your children are healthy, then you can conquer anything. And we've learned that that's basically the most important thing. So tell us, what do you want to leave our listeners with today? If you want to make an impression on other mothers or as a life coach, what message would you like to leave with us?
Yeah, I think it's really reiterating what you said, Ellen, about like our thoughts really create our experience, our emotional experience of things and how we are experiencing either stress or not stress. And so think about like, what do you really want to get out of this? If you are looking back, you know, 6 months from now, do you want to think about how you just like struggled every single day to try and get your work done and it didn't work anyways? Don't be afraid to like stop the speeding train and take a look around and readjust. And then even if you're chugging along, just like stop and question those things and be okay with letting it go. You know, holding on so tightly to something that's not working is causing yourself suffering. And if you're suffering, it's a problem and it's a problem worth fixing. So reach out to those resources, figure out a way to change it. Really just this idea that we should all be suffering and drinking a bottle of wine a night and that's like the new norm, it really isn't, you know, what I think we should be telling mothers. And I wanna make sure that you know that there are so many moms out here who are willing to like listen to you and help you vent and help you manage through this. But there's also moms who, you know, like I said, like I haven't figured it out. I don't have a magic bullet, but I am learning things and I do know some tactics and I'm my study through the brain, right? Just as you were saying, and understanding how our thoughts create our feelings, which drive us into certain actions, which create a different result. Really understanding those brain processes help us so much in these extra stressful times to work towards something we actually want and get the feelings that we actually want to cultivate and have different thoughts about it all. And the change in perspective really does create an entirely different experience for us of this crisis and of your day-to-day, you know, environment.
So if they want to use you as a resource and have some coaching sessions with you, Emily, how do they find you?
At emilyfears.com. It's spelled like F-E-A-I-R-S is my last name. I like to say it's fierce. We said really quickly, but it is Emily, EmilyFEAIRS.com. You can find out about me there or on Instagram at Emily Fears. I do a lot of coaching as well in those DMs. So if you ever have a question, feel free to shoot me a DM and I would love to talk to you one-on-one.
Emily, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. Good luck, you and your husband, John, and look after those two beautiful children.
Thank you so much, Ellen. Thank you for having me. Take care, everyone.
We'll be right back. Are you ready to transform and empower your life by changing the way you think, feel, and act? Then it's time to schedule a coaching call appointment with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified empowerment coach and recovery coach. My style of coaching is part cheerleader and part drill sergeant. Always in your corner and at the same time giving you the push you need to truly move forward and exactly what you need to take command of your life. If you are ready for the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I am ready for you. Visit my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says one-on-one coaching. Make an appointment today.
Welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners and podcast listeners everywhere. This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, and we are on my podcast, Everybody Needs a Little Push. I put some messages out there to my podcast fan page and to some of the groups that I participate in, and I asked a whole bunch of women how they're doing in COVID-19 living with children at home. I have one gal on with me today that had two small children, and now I want to hear from somebody that has two children that are, one is high school age and the other one is in college. So I'd like to introduce you to a very lovely woman who absolutely resides in the same state I do, which is amazing. And we found that out online the other day. Her name is Hamida. She is a financial executive, and she also has a great podcast called Sharing Life's Lessons. She is also a mother of two children, a boy who is 17 and a young woman who is 20. I cannot wait to hear what's going on in that household in New Jersey and have her give us some insight as to how her children are handling staying inside and all of our stay-at-home directives. The Pushy Broad from the Bronx welcomes Hamida. Good afternoon.
Hello, Ellen. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. So what made you decide to reach out and answer my request?
So I have two kids. One 17, one 20, one a junior in high school, and one a junior in college, both with very different sentiments. And so I thought it would be good to share what the two of them come with, with what kind of sentiments they come with living together again as a family.
That's great. That's really what I want to know. So first of all, let's back this up. Tell us briefly, living together again as a family. So when COVID-19 hit, who came back from where and how is this happening?
Oh, it's a wonderful story. Okay, I will tell you first about my daughter. My daughter is a junior and she was in her study abroad program. So she was in Morocco and she was there since January, beginning of January. When COVID-19 hit, I called her college and I said, hey, look, I know many of her friends are coming back mandatorily from other parts of the world, mainly from Europe, from Spain and Italy. So are you getting my child back? And they go, no, Morocco is level 2. It's okay. We are not mandating any of that. She can continue being there. So I spoke to Karina and I go, hey, are you feeling safe there? Is this what your school is saying? She's saying, yes, mom, it's much safer here than it is in the US. I'm listening to all of these US stories and I feel like it's much safer here. So, okay, that's fine. We'll go with the flow. And then suddenly Morocco, which has its border with Spain, closed its border with Spain, specifically the ferry part of it. So, and she was at her spring break, and she actually had tickets to go to Spain. So obviously now the borders are closed, and I go, you're not going anywhere. You just cancel all your tickets for spring break. Nothing. You're just staying put in Morocco. So that's what she did. She canceled her tickets, got all her money back. And that was a Friday. Then she called me on Sunday, and she goes, guess what? Morocco has closed all its borders now. All international borders are closed. And I go, what? Does that mean flights as well? Yep, all flights canceled. And that's when I panicked. And I go, as much as I know she is safe there in a controlled environment, I don't know how long the borders are going to be closed. Maybe it'll go through her entire semester, maybe into the summer. I need to get her back. And we need to get back as a family. A crisis that the family needs to be together.
So this was in January that you brought her back?
No. Now we are into March. She left in January, but we're into March. She was supposed to be there till May. So now in March, when they closed the borders, that's when I panicked. And then I started researching and looking at everywhere. And finally, after 2 weeks, I found out that there were rescue flights going from UK into Morocco that could bring her into UK. And then I could bring her back from UK to New Jersey without an issue.
So that's your daughter. Now tell me about your son.
So my son is in high school. So he's in the town. He's actually in a private high school. Many of his friends are in the public high school, but my son is in the private. So they had their spring break. And then during their spring break, which is the beginning of March, is when we got the letter from the principal saying that the kids are not coming back to school. They have to stay home. We're going to have to start doing remote learning. No, it was mid-March. It was 15th of March that they were going to go back. And we got a letter saying, kids are not coming back. We're going to have to do something about remote learning. Give us a few days to get this all set up, because obviously it's new for the teachers too. They've never done something like this ever before. So they extended the spring break for 3 or 4 more days. And then they started doing remote learning. So he came home in the sense he was home for spring break for 2 weeks, and then he never went back to school.
He never went back. I understand. So you and your husband are home. First of all, are you both working from home yourself?
I am working from home, and my husband is not working from home because he can't.
So he's in an essential business and he has to go outside of the home?
No, he's not working at all. He can't work from home. His business is something that he can't do from home. He has to be on client sites.
Oh, I see.
So his business is gone. It stopped.
His business stopped. I'm sorry, Beth.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll resume as time goes on. So you have mom and dad. Yes, fingers crossed. Mom and dad and your two children at home, young adults. First, generally, how's everybody getting along? How was it in the beginning, and is it different now?
It was a transition. Like everything else, it was a transition. So I told you the story about... I'm sorry?
Very diplomatic. It was a transition.
Yes. Because my daughter obviously was having such a good time in Morocco. And she had all these plans. But that's what that whole experience is for, to traveling with friends and to being at a new place and integrating yourself into that culture. And that's why she chose Morocco, because she wanted to integrate into the culture. And now that from January to March, she started feeling comfortable and feeling integrated, is when she got pulled out of it. So for her, it was very difficult. Every time she was home in the beginning, it was more like, and sometimes it hurt to hear that. She didn't say it in a devious manner, but it hurt. But mommy, this is not where I want to be right now. And I'm going, oh no, my daughter doesn't want to be home with me.
So then you learn to get over that and not take it personally.
Absolutely. Right? And she didn't mean it personally, right? So no, it did take a while for her to get over it too and say, hey, it is what it is. I'm just going to have to deal with it. And for mom too, for me too, it was like, it is what it is. I'm just going to have to make this day for her good enough that she feels like she didn't have to give up a whole lot or miss much.
Besides, she wasn't the only one giving up. It's really? Not like you just brought her home. I mean, everybody else was going to be home. So yeah. Tell me, what did the school decide to do? I mean, so this is all cut short. What are the school's plans in September? Is it strictly going to be an online thing for her, or is she going to resume travel abroad?
So travel abroad will not resume. That is done. That was just for one semester till May. So when she came back, she actually had to do remote learning with her university in Morocco. And it was on Morocco time. So her first class on Tuesdays and Thursdays was at 4:30 a.m. It is what it is.
Well, you know, look, I remember being 20 years old, so I know that the only way that I could make a 4:30 class is if I stayed up all night, okay? There was no way that I was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So it was a couple of all-nighters to make that happen.
Well, she got some discounts from the teachers, obviously, and so they allowed her to just do one day. But she finished her school at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. She was done, right? So that was the positive. She could nap all she wanted after that.
And your son?
My son had classes every morning from 9 to 2. And being a private school, it's not asynchronous learning, it's all synchronous. So he has to be in front of the laptop for 5 hours with a 1 hour lunch break in between. And this is, it's a Zoom class. They're using Zoom, the Zoom platform, exactly what we're using right now. And for him, it's not that hard. So he's a very easygoing kid. So the content is the same. The teachers are delivering the same content that they would as if he was going to school, right? But he's saying the delivery method is very tedious. At the end of the day, you have a headache. You're just constantly staring at the screen. I asked him if the rapport between the teacher and the kids and the discussions between the kids and the kids, is it the same or is it better or worse? And he said, obviously it's worse because some kids are just waking up, they're plopped in their beds, they are, especially in the mornings, some are very demotivated. And some of his public school friends are totally demotivated because they have asynchronous learning. They don't get together in a classroom on Zoom. They just get their assignments, they do their assignments, and then if they have any questions, then they knock, knock to the teachers and say, hey, here's my problem, tell me what to do about it.
It's certainly a very different way of learning. There's no question. And I'm very sympathetic towards the platform and towards teachers because I spent most of my career being a teacher. I completely understand what that's like. And I understand that when we do recordings, you and I are talking here on Zoom and it's very lovely. We spent an hour or two together. But if I had to sit down every single day and spend 5 hours in front of this screen in this way, it would be very detrimental. And nobody would get anything out of it in a really good way. They do have to try to come up with something that is much more fruitful because I think this kind of learning may have to go on for a while. And in order for it to be successful, they have to come up with innovations in learning to sustain the engagement.
Totally agree. And it's not only sustaining the engagement, but also making sure that the kids are learning. They're there to learn and they're getting that experience, the learning experience.
Yes, the actual learning experience is a very big thing. So tell me about the dispositions and the emotions in the family. When do tempers run hot or cold and how the communication is and how that progressed over the last 2 months?
Sure. So let me tell you about my son. With him, he was home all the first. He was in school all the time. He didn't come home. He came home after dinner. He used to come home around 7:30. He used to have dinner with his friends and then come home. So he was on his own from morning to evening. And he was after school. He did sports. He went to the gym. He did community learning with the kids. So he had all of these activities that were structured for him. Mm-hmm. Now he had to structure everything on his own. He had to learn to structure everything on his own because it wasn't something he did. Like he just went with the flow in school and then he had this fixed timeline. Now he had to create that. So I think for him, it was a harder transition. And then on top of that, mommy and daddy were always at home. So they could see everything that he's doing. And then if he's on video games for too long, mommy's telling him he's on video games for too long. He's not used to that. So that's when the temper flares happen. His thing is, if I don't get you the grades, and if I'm not keeping up with my grades, then you can tell me something. But I guarantee you, I will get the same grades that you're used to getting from me.
And has that been happening?
So that has been happening, yes. Yes. And when I saw his midterm grades, I knew I had to step back, that he had things under control, the transition had happened for him. Now he knows exactly what to do. I do see him giving priority to his academics. And then obviously he needs a break. His usual break was sports and being outside with his friends and going out for dinners with his friends. He can't do any of that. So if I don't let him use video games as a way to take his breaks, then the poor kid is going to be messed up.
Exactly. And it's very interesting because you said some interesting things there. First of all, you said that he has learned to adjust to certain routines. So really understanding that as a 17-year-old, he's creating his own routine. So this is a very big plus, especially in this particular situation, because we are all struggling to create our own routines. Right. Without that kind of discipline in this situation, we are all flailing. We are all either laying in bed with the covers over our head, or we're just going in completely the opposite direction. So someone at this age learning structure, accountability, and balance on his own in this way is a marvelous thing and is an outstanding tool for adulthood. There's no question.
You're right. He's totally adjusted. And as a mother, I know that there are some things that he's doing that I do not agree with. And if I was setting the standards for him, it is not something that I would let him do. For example, I'll give you an example. His class starts at 9. My thing is, Avi, wake up at 8 o'clock, have your breakfast, take a nice shower so your body is, you're physically, you're fresh, you're ready to learn. But that's my standard. His routine is, Mommy, 9 o'clock class, can you make sure I'm alive at 8:45?
But understand that's because he's 17.
Exactly.
And there is no way that a kid's going to start their day.
I agree.
Day. It will change in time. And Mom, I commend you for knowing when to speak up and knowing when to shut up.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I shut up. As long as the rest of the day is going fine, it's okay if he sleeps for another half an hour.
And he said he's got the grades to prove it. So that's a really good thing. Let me know how you and your husband are feeling about the kind of lessons you've learned in terms of your children. How are you growing and learning with your kids? What have you gotten out of this time together?
So on a very tactical basis, there's actually quite a bit that we've learned. There's a lot we are learning from the kids. For example, I am a great PowerPoint user and I know how to use PowerPoint. But I don't know how to use Google Sheets, which is the Google version of PowerPoint. And it looks fancier. The end product looks fancier. So I'm having Avi teach me how to do Google Sheets because he's a pro at it, right? So that way we are spending that kind of time together where we are learning from each other. Avi and I love to play chess together, but we've never had the time to play chess together. So now on the weekends, we are taking out time to at least play one game together. Right. So that those kinds of family times to me are precious. To me, my daughter would never have been home this, especially for Mother's Day. They were both home with me and they both cooked me breakfast. And that was amazing because my daughter would not have been here. She would have been away. So this was a very special Mother's Day. So that way they're learning how to cook from us. So my husband is a very good cook too. He makes great Parmesan and he makes great lasagna. And he's taught them how to make it. The kids have to each cook one day a week. They can choose which day they're cooking. We get them the ingredients, and then we leave the kitchen and they cook. Those are, I think, the growing moments that you're asking me to tell you about.
That's a wonderful thing. It really is. So, of course, the kids are home for the summer and things are starting to open up a little bit. Are your kids getting antsy? Like, Ma, I want to go. I want to go. What's happening there?
Not really. So my son has a lot of friends in the development. I live in a development of 90 homes and he's got about 9-10 friends his age, all juniors, but they go to the public school. He's the only one that goes to the private school. So what they have started recently doing since the parks are open is everyone is masked up, everyone on their own bikes, and they are biking together at a distance, maybe 2 or 3 times a week. They just started this last week. So they get out 2 or 3 times. And that's good for him. That's good enough. Otherwise, he's playing out. We have a basketball hoop, so he's playing outside. He's doing the basketball thing. He's more of an outdoorsy person. He's done his half marathons, and he's waiting to start running again to do another half marathon. But on the other hand, my daughter is very happy to be indoors because when she's in school, when she's in college, she has to be outdoors all the time for schools, for activities, with friends. So she's very happy to be home and not getting out.
So now she's enjoying her time. All right. So I find that it's the similar message of all moms and dads. It's wonderful to have this time with your children and to really grow and learn and experience them. And also, what do you think that you have learned in terms of parenting? What new skills do you think you've learned?
The biggest skill I've learned is when to back off. I absolutely now have total control over that. I can sense from both my children, they each have a different way of telling me, "Mom, back off." And I've learned that. And I'm using that to really back off, which I think is a major accomplishment for both them and for me, because it makes their life very easy. And I feel like that is a pivotal part of parenting, which I did not have that skill before, and now I have it. For Avi especially, I think he very nicely sat me down. He actually had a conversation with me, and he said, "Mommy, I have this. If I tell you, if you're telling me something, and if I tell you, 'Mommy, I have this,' you have to believe that I have this." And that was great, because that is his cue to me anytime. And it's not like he doesn't let me tell him anything. There are many things that he'll listen and he'll let me tell. But at some time, he'll say, "Mommy, I got this. And I know that that's it. That's the end of the discussion. I move away."
And that's a very good lesson for mothers everywhere. Knowing when to push and knowing when to back off. And learning how to let go and trusting your child to do the right thing.
And it's not very easy to let go. It is not. But at some point, you have to.
Let's just give one last word to our listeners out there. I know backing off is a wonderful thing. What else do you want them to know about parenting during this time?
Oh, gosh. I just want them to know that this is a time I feel that is a blessing. As much as there's so much stuff that's happening out there that is undesirable, and we wish that never had happened. We know there are so many out there who are suffering. We know there are so many heroes out there. And I thank them from the bottom of my heart. And I'm talking about the healthcare workers and the frontliners who are doing remarkable work out there. And we're losing so many to COVID. That's the non-desirable part of COVID. But there is a better part of COVID, which is families have come together. Friends are checking in on each other. Grandparents are checking in on grandmas and grandpas. And this family time is, I feel, a blessing to all of us. I'm saying to parents, let's just milk it. Let's just have a lot of family time together. Let's support. If there is any time to support our kids, it is right now. Find out if they have any issues with mental health, which is big. There's mental health normally is an issue with teenagers. Now, not being able to socialize with their friends and not being able to, if they're going out, not being able to see their girlfriends, not being able to, you know, do normal stuff that teenagers do. It is conducive to mental health issues. Checking on them, make sure that they're not going through any of that. And if they are, then see how you can support them. I mean, this is the time we can really, really come together and support our kids.
This is the time. There's no better time than right now to observe and communicate, correct?
Absolutely. I'm with you.
Fantastic, Amita. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much again for having me on the show, Evan.
This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening. And remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, New York.